Hello, listeners. This podcast is hosted by International IDEA. In the next minutes, we will help you make sense of what's happening today with democracy around the world. Let's check on democracy's achievements and challenges using comparative global data and expert analysis.
Hello and welcome to International IDEA's new podcast, Democracy Ideas. My name is Adina Trunk, and I work as the Special Advisor to the Secretary General here at International IDEA. Today's podcast will be focusing on a topic that many of us interested in democracy have started to debate: whether the current coronavirus, aside from being detrimental for public health and the economy, also could have negative repercussions on democracy. Some argue that this is already the case. Others say it's too early to tell. In other words, when it comes to the negative impact of the coronavirus on democracy, should we expect passing symptoms or permanent damage? To discuss this further, I have with me two very distinguished guests: Dr. Staffan E. Lindberg, the director and principal investigator for the Varieties of Democracy Institute at the Gothenburg University, which is renowned for its global, extensive, and detailed measurements of democracy, and Dr. Kevin Casasamora, the Secretary General of International IDEA, the only intergovernmental organization exclusively focusing on strengthening and advancing democracy around the world. Welcome, Professor Lindberg and Secretary General Casasamora. One thing that one can be certain of is that both of you have extensive knowledge of democracy. If I didn't miscount, together you have more than 50 years of experience of democracy and democratic governments, as researchers, analysts, educators, consultants, and in the case of Dr. Casasamora, also high-ranking positions within the administrations of its home country of Costa Rica. That bodes well for a very interesting conversation on the topic of the short and long-term impact of the coronavirus on democracy. Now, if I can start with you, Professor Lindberg, I think that over 100 countries have some kind of a state of emergency or emergency laws in response to the coronavirus. Many are limiting fundamental democratic and human rights, such as the freedom of movement and assembly. In your opinion, can this be justified? And if so, how and for how long? And when do those measures become undemocratic or a threat to democracy?
Thank you, and thank you for having me here for this conversation. Yes, over 100 countries in the world now have some kind of state of emergency or emergency laws. They can be legitimate, of course, in a situation such as now with the global pandemic. They have to be limited in time, though, and they're also a series of non-derogable rights that cannot be limited, such as freedom of speech, whereas the limiting to some extent freedom of movement and freedom of assembly can be justified for a short period. And it has to be, according to the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, has to be proportionate. And maybe that's one of the things that can be discussed, whether the measures taken in these 100 plus countries are proportionate. There are a number of countries that have gone further in a legal sense, in Poland, in Hungary, in Europe, with additional laws that affect media freedom and freedom of speech more generally. There are also countries that have started to attack and jail journalists who are critical about the government responses. And that, of course, is not acceptable and a threat to democracy.
Thank you, Professor Lindberg. I know that VDEM has already started to look at this more closely in a pandemic backsliding index. And how would you say that the development has been so far?
Well, our first assessment that we came out with pretty quickly after the pandemic started, and was sort of an initial analysis. There were actually 48 countries in the world where the risk of democratic declines as a result of the pandemic and is very high. And another 34 countries in the world where there is a medium risk of democratic decline in the longer run as a result of this. It is very worrying. We will update this and refine the analysis and the measures we use and come up with a new assessment towards the end of June this month.
Thank you, Professor. And now, Secretary General, are you as concerned as Professor Lindbergh about these measurements that have been taken, the emergency measurements?
Generally speaking, I am concerned, but I take a little bit of a more sanguine view of all this. My impression is that in the vast majority of cases, without denying that once you invoke emergency powers, there's always a risk of overreaching. In the vast majority of cases, it's still very early to tell. It's early days in this crisis. So in a way, if we want to have that discussion, you would probably have to ask me that question in a year's time. By then, it would have become clear which countries have deployed emergency powers in ways that are compatible with democratic practice, and which countries have gone beyond that. Having said that, I think one can easily identify cases which are, you know, where flashing lights have gone off already, and some of them concern precisely, you know, some of the things that Professor Lindbergh has mentioned. I mean, to me, one red line that is not to be crossed when we talk about emergency powers is using those powers to crack down on media and on freedom of the press. If anything, this emergency calls for as much information as possible to be out there so that people can make informed decisions about everything. So to me, there's no reasonable case to be made to crack down on media in the midst of this emergency. When that happens, we can be pretty sure that there's an authoritarian intention behind that. When that happens, one is forced to raise an eyebrow. So it is those cases that I think should attract our attention. For the other cases, the jury's still out. And actually, what we're seeing in most places is that checks and balances have been activated. Even in problematic cases, and you know, in the region of the world where I come from, Latin America, you have one problematic case in El Salvador, where President Bukele is in a rather obvious way intent on executing a power grab. And even in that case, where emergency powers have been invoked in very strident terms by President Bukele, Congress has not played along to the irritation of the president, and the Constitutional Court has not played along. So one can point, even in problematic cases, you know, a lot of good evidence of checks and balances actually working to protect democracy.
Both of you said something very interesting. Both of you alluded to the pre-existing health or status of a democracy prior to the coronavirus pandemic. Can it be that, similar to how underlying health conditions or health problems affect people more severely once they have the virus. Could it be a similar case for democracy? That the ones that have underlying conditions, the fragile democracy, are more vulnerable when it comes to democratic backsliding or negative impacts of the coronavirus. I mean, we know that the democratic space around the world was already shrinking before the corona crisis broke out. So how do you see those underlying conditions and the pre-existing status of a democracy playing out, and whether or not the weakened democratic space that we were seeing will fare during and after the corona crisis? Maybe Professor Lindberg, if you want to start with this one.
Yes, I think it's absolutely clear that the countries that were already backsliding on democracy as of 2019 and early 2020 are also the countries, many of them are the countries where we see the most risk of further backsliding as a result of the pandemic. And in many cases, the countries that have already enacted either illegitimate laws or implemented the general sort of legitimate laws on free restricting freedom of movement, but implementing them in a discriminatory fashion. In our democracy report 2020, we show that the 2019 was a particularly bad year for democracy already. That we called it autocratization surges. That was the title of the report. And that's really what we see in the data for 2019. So the pandemic came at a particularly bad time for the world, if you like, in terms of democracy. And I mean, we could just look at Europe, the region where we are in. In 2019, and over the past 10 years, there have been significant declines in democracy in Hungary that we no longer classify as a democracy, in Poland, in Bulgaria, in Romania. And these are also the countries where, either in the case of Hungary and Poland, I would say there are some even illegitimate laws in response to the pandemic affecting media freedom. And in both Bulgaria and Romania, there are implementations of lockdowns that are affecting, for example, the Roma people disproportionately worse. So implementation is the problem. And we see the same pattern in the rest of the world. That countries that have already backslid on democracy a lot and in many cases become electoral authoritarian regimes are also where you find the most sort of problematic responses. And it sort of makes sense. There's less of a buffer. The horizontal accountability mechanisms that the legislature or the judiciary can provide and the sort of what some call diagonal accountability in terms of civil society and the media being a check on the government and what they do, they are all weakened already. So there is less of a buffer mechanism or a buoyancy mechanism where you can push back against further executive aggrandizement, grab of power and use of that power to stay in power. And it would also make sense if I was a wannabe dictator in a country out there and there are already some tools available to me, and then the pandemic comes and I can enact a lot of emergency laws and instruct security agencies and whatnot in ways that would make me even safer in power for the long term. Of course I would do that. That's logic. You would use a situation like this.
In other words, use a weakened immunity in democracies.
Weakened immunity, if you want to use the health metaphor. I forgot that's how you started this. Yes, I talked about buoyancy, but it's essentially the same thing. Mm-hmm. You have, if you like, a weakened immune system Norway is going to survive emergency laws for a while, and France and so on, right? But the countries that where the institutions and associational life that can protect democracy is already weak, obviously there is less going to be less resistance to further autocratization.
Thank you, Professor. Kevin, would you like to comment on these rather dire remarks?
I totally agree with that. I mean, COVID-19 is the trigger of some kinds of risks for democracy, but is in most cases is not the underlying condition. The underlying condition that pretty much determines whether a democracy will suffer as a result of this is pre-existing, is something that was there before COVID struck, and it's got a lot to do with the with the strength of the rule of law. It is not entirely coincidental that, say, in Latin America, countries like Uruguay or Costa Rica are doing well when it comes to dealing with the pandemic with full respect for fundamental rights. I mean, those institutions were there before. In the case of Europe, one of the most interesting cases that proves this is what has just happened in Poland. You know, as a result of all the emergency, they took the decision to go ahead with the election, with the presidential election, and in the process of doing that, they decided to change a series of rules that surround the electoral process. And this was a decision that soon became very contentious, and predictably enough, in the light of what has happened in Poland over the past few years, it was a decision that was rammed down the throat of the opposition, which of course vociferously objected to that. And in the end, they couldn't go ahead with the election. They had to backtrack. And the important point here is that compare that experience with the experience of a country where democracy is in much better, exhibits much better health, like South Korea. In South Korea, they faced exactly the same decision, and they took exactly the same decision in the sense that they decided to go ahead with the election. And yet, they did that in a way that was underpinned by a broad-based consensus where the opposition very much agreed and was part of the discussion as to which changes needed to be made for the electoral process to go ahead. So in a way, a very similar decision in the context of an emergency made by two countries became a reflection of the underlying health of democracy in those two countries. So yes, I mean, if COVID-19 is just the trigger, but the crucial issue that it defines the fate that different countries face when it comes to COVID-19 is the underlying health of their democratic institutions and of their rule of law protections.
We're discussing the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on democracy today with Professor Stefan Lindberg from Gothenburg University and the Varieties of Democracy Institute, and Dr. Kevin Casasamora, the Secretary General of International IDEA. If we're to continue talking about how the coronavirus is impacting on democracy, what would you say, aside from the few enumerations you've already provided us with, what would you say are the short-term impact that we're seeing, and what are the possible or probable long-term impact that this pandemic will have? And to throw in a third question in that, are we only seeing a negative impact, or are there also possible positive side effects of this? Can actually democracies come out stronger following this pandemic? I don't know, Kevin, if you want to start, for example.
Sure. Well, again, it is early days to know the final result of all this for democracy in different places. However, one thing I'm going to say is that despite all the doom and gloom that seems to have become more acute over the past 3 months in so many ways, there are opportunities for democratic renewal in all this. And I'm going to mention a couple. One thing that strikes me about what's happening is that the sheer magnitude of the crisis is such. And I'm not talking here only about the public health crisis, but actually in particular about the economic crisis. The magnitude is such that it will force a lot of countries to go back to the drawing board and renegotiate the social contract and recast the distribution of burdens between groups, recast the relationship between societies, states, and markets.
We're discussing the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on democracy today with Professor Stefan Lindberg from Gothenburg University and the Varieties of Democracy Institute, and Dr. Kevin Casasamora, the Secretary General of International IDEA. If we're to continue talking about how the coronavirus is impacting on democracy, what would you say, aside from the few enumerations you've already provided us with, what would you say are the short-term impact that we're seeing, and what are the possible or probable long-term impact that this pandemic will have? And to throw in a third question in that, are we only seeing a negative impact, or are there also possible positive side effects of this? Can actually democracies come out stronger following this pandemic? I don't know, Kevin, if you want to start, for example.
Again, it is early days to know the final result of all this for democracy in different places. However, one thing I'm going to say is that despite all the doom and gloom that seems to have become more acute over the past 3 months in so many ways, there are opportunities for democratic renewal in all this. And I'm going to mention a couple. One thing that strikes me about what's happening is that the sheer magnitude of the crisis is such. And I'm not talking here only about the public health crisis, but actually in particular about the economic crisis. The magnitude is such that it will force a lot of countries to go back to the drawing board and renegotiate the social contract and recast the distribution of burdens between groups, recast the relationship between societies, states, and markets. And not every country will have the institutions able to process in an effective way that kind of social and political dialogue. And some countries will, some countries won't. But in those countries that have the institutions to channel this kind of societal dialogue, I mean, we have a chance that a new social compact, more equitable economic institutions, more inclusive societies, more democratic political systems can emerge from this. And I, for one, would hope to see that in many places, new constitutions, in new fiscal pacts, new pacts of the kind that you often see in a post-conflict and post-authoritarian situations will emerge as a result of this. This is roughly what happened in Western Europe after the catastrophe of the Second World War. A new social and economic and political equilibrium emerged from that. It's not a done deal, and in many places, what we will see is very different. What we will see in the absence of that sort of dialogue is violence, is conflict, is authoritarianism. And that's what happened in many places during and right after the Great Depression of the 1930s. So both outcomes are possible. But the important thing is that at least in a few countries, and I would hope that in many countries, there's an opportunity for democratic renewal that can come out of this enormous crisis that we are facing.
Professor Lindberg, do you share the Secretary General's optimism?
Yes, maybe. I think in terms of short and long-term effects, if I think about the short-term effects, there's one thing that strikes me very, very obvious. So 2019 was, I think, by The Economist called the year of protests. And our data with the VDEM data collection showed that it was a record high mobilization for democracy in the world in 2019. 44% of countries in the world had pro-democratic protests, both in democracies that were sort of declining on democracies, such as Bolivia and Poland and Malawi, but also in autocracies where people pushed for democratization. Most people saw the protests in Hong Kong, but you had Algeria and not to mention the revolution in Sudan as a result of popular mobilization. So as this enormous wave of pro-democratic mobilization that just came to a complete and absolute halt with the corona pandemic because of the restrictions of freedom of movement and assembly. In many cases, obviously, legitimate restrictions because of the crisis. But that's sort of an immediate and very profound impact, I think, on the world, that wave was stopped in its tracks. And we can only hope that once the pandemic has sort of subsided more, that this engagement for democracy can resurface and surge back, because I think it's really, really needed to counter the global trend of autocratization that we otherwise see. On the longer term, I agree completely with Kevin here with the possibilities for renegotiating the social contract, if you like, in many countries in the world. I'm not sure it will happen though. we are in a world where for the past 40 years, inequality, relative inequality has risen and risen dramatically. Started, of course, with Thatcherism and Reaganomics, and then was spread to the global south with the Washington Consensus, with various neoliberal reforms that maybe many were needed, but has gone very, very far and had profound implications for how our societies are organized. And then this pandemic comes and economies shut down, and that hits the already relatively weaker and relatively poorer segments of the population much, much more than the better off. So it's just exacerbating what has already been going on and already was going really far. That may create forces, as Kevin talked about, for a renegotiation of the social contract and a revisiting of how we organize our societies. And hopefully, I hope that you're right, Kevin. I'm really supportive for you. But I don't think it's a given that that's where most countries in the world would go. The other possibility, also drawing on history and what we saw in the 1920s and 30s, that this kind of crisis can also further drive polarization in society, a polarization that we already saw before the pandemic in so many places. And that polarization can also easily stimulate radicalization of illiberal populist tendencies. And if that becomes the dominant wave, we are much more likely to face a 1930s scenario than a sort of Rousseauan Mills social contract renegotiation. I don't think it's a given which way we'll go, but I think it's necessary that we contemplate the possibility of something happening out of this health and then economic crisis, that something emerges there that's rather reminds of the 1930s than of a, say, 1950s and 60s rebuilding of society.
Right. So two different scenarios for the future, one slightly more optimistic and one slightly more pessimistic.
Adina, can I say something to to this? I mean, I absolutely agree, Stefan. I mean, it's not a done deal. It's not a done deal, and a lot will depend on the political institutions that each country has to process this kind of crisis. One thing that this pandemic has rendered absolutely evident is that the enormous price that societies pay for underproviding public goods, particularly healthcare. And when one sees a prime minister, somebody like Prime Minister Boris Johnson, emerging from the hospital to heap praise on the National Health Service in Britain and to call the NHS Britain's most important national asset, one has to think that a long overdue rebalancing of the relationship between states and markets is more likely than it was 3 months ago. So I'm hoping that this will be one of the legacies of this pandemic in at least a few places. I agree with you that it's not a done deal, and that in many places, sadly, what we will see is a further deterioration of democratic principles. But there's an opportunity that we should not simply contemplate from afar. I think that those of us that are working to advance democracy globally should do everything within our power, from speaking up to sharing information about good practices and good experiences around the world, so that the positive outcomes are more likely than the possibility of democratic breakdowns and further polarization and all the bad things that can come as a result of this pandemic if it's not handled in a good way by political systems.
Thank you very much, Professor Lindbergh and Secretary General Kevin Casasamora. Please check out our other podcasts if you're interested in more democracy ideas. And for now, I would say goodbye and thank you again for listening. And thank you to both of the speakers for these very interesting and insightful thoughts about the impact of coronavirus on democracy.
Thank you for your time and keep following International IDEA on social media. We can be found on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. We need all of you to participate in constructing better societies. Goodbye.